It's August 22nd, 2011, and this is The Hell Yeah Show. Hello and welcome to The Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And we are bringing you best practices for fail-free living. That is tips on how to get the most out of your technology and advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery, how are you doing?
My day is ruined by technology, so yours doesn't have to be. Actually, this is a big day for people working in higher education. First day of classes here, and so it was pretty busy, but
wow,
managed to pull through.
Yeah, I'm surprised you got home in time to do this podcast.
Yeah, well, it's I actually last week I was there pretty late on a regular basis just because trying to get everything ready. Got a couple things to wrap up still that hopefully will all be finalized soon, and I'll get back into the swing of things.
Huh? So you've got, I'd imagine, hundreds, if not thousands, questionably secured computers. Entering the network within the span of a few days.
Yeah, it's always there's always that possibility.
nice. I know at my school they enforce, you know, you have to actually, I don't know, on Mac you don't have to install antivirus, but on a PC you've got to install antivirus software, and then it runs a system checker and all that stuff. Are you as strict about that?
No, there's there are some campuses that use like a really some advanced, what they call a NAC or network access control, to require systems that connect to their network have some sort of AV and demonstrate some capability of having recent patches and things like that. Ours isn't one of those.
So more fun for you.
yeah, exactly. It's always entertaining. There's always something happening.
All right, very good.
To be honest, like most of what we do is education stuff and outreach and infrastructure side stuff. We have like a really strong help desk that does really well for helping people out with things like antivirus software and all that.
Nice. All right, well, let's see. What we're talking about today is whatever is on our minds or whatever is in the news lately, as it is always with the Hell Yeah Show. I was trawling through the news, as I sometimes do, and saw some recent mumblings about a topic that's been in and out of the news for a few months lately, is the idea that Amazon may make a tablet PC, or just a tablet at this point. I don't think they're called tablet PCs anymore. I'm a little behind the times.
Yeah, who knows? It's a post-PC world, Al.
I've heard that, yeah. So let's see. Amazon applied for a trademark for Lab 126, which is the name of the group that makes the Kindle. So potentially they're looking to bring that name into more of a public view, or make it more of sort of a publicly facing brand name. Could also be a complete coincidence. But this is paired with the Wall Street Journal recently saying that an Amazon tablet will be released by October, and Amazon registering the domain names KindleScribe.com and KindleAir.com.
Interesting.
So what do you make of this?
Well, there's been a lot of big things happening at Amazon in general. They've got their streaming video services taking off. They also recently added the Star Treks, just like Netflix did. A friend of mine clued me into that. Pretty great. I think they're well positioned for distributing media, and if they were also able to control the device that media gets delivered to, that'd probably be a pretty big win for them. And Apple's really done them no favors. Kept them a little bit out of the app store for in-app purchases, so you can't like buy a book for the Kindle app on your phone without going to the website. And then Amazon makes the Kindle web. What do they call it?
The
Kindle web reader.
App, basically.
Yeah, they had to change all that stuff around, and I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, they're certainly, that's giving them plenty of motivation to take a decidedly strong interest in the hardware that they have interacting with their services.
Yeah, and they've done very well with the Kindle, despite everybody proclaiming that when the iPad came out, it would do everything the Kindle does and more, and why would you ever buy a Kindle after you've got this device that does anything you'd want to. Still, the price point of the Kindle combined with the fact that it is so dedicated towards making a good reading experience still makes it the top seller on Amazon last time I checked. So
yeah,
they're
sure
obviously doing quite well with it.
Yeah, everyone I know that has a Kindle loves it. It's that display. And it's also, I mean, Apple's hip to this too, though, because they just recently had like some sort of either a patent filing or started acquiring hardware or equipment to make a like a hybrid display that potentially could be used on an iPad so that you could flip it into like an e-ink style display. No, I'm dead serious.
You know, I know that makes total sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that it's something that people know is a deficiency on the iPad. They're not spectacular for reading text for extended periods of time. They're mm-hmm. great for like documents and stuff, but
yeah.
I don't do a lot of book reading on my iPad, to be honest.
So what do you think about the contrast between sort of a dual display like you were talking about? What if we just went to an e-ink display that could display color? Would that be good enough?
No, because in order for them to be effective, they have to be slow, right?
Like, right.
They're not able to do like motion.
Right. So you think, I mean, on an e-reader type device, not necessarily a full tablet.
Oh, okay.
But say the next Kindle has a color e-ink screen. Is that enough to compete, or do they still have to release whatever this tablet they've got in the works is?
You know what? For reading, I don't even know that I care about color. I mean, certainly on some level, like the interactive books that like Al Gore's group put out, they had like some sort of planet Earth exploration mm-hmm. interactive textbook thing that they have on the store. I flipped through it briefly. Someone else had it, and it was really cool. And I like that as a demo of technology.
That's on the iTunes App Store.
Yeah, for the iPad, it's really beautiful. But you know, I think for like extended reading of a textbook or something, I mean, you really need not so much the color as much as a really legible display that doesn't strain your eyes to look at.
Right.
I think that's really it.
Yeah. Everyone said when the iPad came out, everyone said the fact that they included Winnie the Pooh with it as a package in was perfect because it demonstrated that this is why you need color for this type of experience.
Yeah,
and this
true.
Is why you need great page turning animations, I guess. But
I certainly see that.
I think you're right because the majority of books are in fact black and white. In fact, the majority of books are just text, no images at all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a big difference. I mean, children's books definitely are. I mean, a lot of those are just really beautiful or iconic in some way for other reasons. You know, it's most of us have. I mean, I don't know if you have any particular memories of children's books when you were a kid, but like
Goodnight Moon.
Goodnight Moon. That's my Chris Walken reading Goodnight Moon impression. You know, I had a bunch of younger sisters, so. I'm the oldest only child of seven, so I have five younger sisters and one younger brother, but they're all halves and steps.
Right.
So I did get to read a lot of children's books when I was in junior high to people who were much, much younger than me, and it was always funny to like even remember them from that perspective. But I think, you know, thumbing through a children's book now, they definitely have really strong emotional responses to them, especially if it's something, you know, one of your favorites, right? But
yeah, so between
I think that type of thing is definitely Apple, the approach in having the more interactive experience of the page turn and the way they can really show how some of the illustrations were done.
That's really
good stuff.
Yeah,
but I think for a lot of like novels and news, it just doesn't it's not necessary. And I think it's again, a children's book is a quick read, and I think something else is a longer read. And I don't want to stare at that display for hours at a time.
Sure. Yeah. So then the idea of an Amazon tablet, where does this fit into this whole picture then?
I don't know. Maybe they already have the technology for a hybrid display, and they're going to be able to make, you know, some sort of a device on Android or God help them, WebOS or something else. But you know, it's also possible that that's part of their plan, and you know, they've got something already being built, and they think it's going to be able to really do a good job. Or you know, it's always possible also that it's just a much better Kindle in some way, and it's not necessarily designed to compete with the iPad because that's a tough market to get into, you know?
Right. Yeah. So I think if they're trying to do a Kindle. Or if they are doing an enhanced Kindle like you're talking about, they can win there. That is something they can do very well.
Yes, and I think it would do very well for them, and I think it would well represent their product and catalog that they've got now. And I mean, the Amazon local stuff, like local delivery and pickup, maybe there's going to be some sort of a location tie. You know, some sort of a kiosk for, you know, like a portable kiosk system that you can just order stuff no matter where you are, or no matter where you are, and have someone show up to your location or something. And, you know, I don't know.
That would be amazing.
It's this Star Trek thing. You got me watching all this Star Trek.
Yep, we will be discussing another episode of Star Trek Next Generation later in the show. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be good. One more question about the Amazon stuff. We've got another tablet story here to discuss as well. But as far as the Amazon tablet goes, so if they're making a better Kindle, we think they're going to win. However, what if they're trying to compete with the iPad? How could they possibly win there? Can they even win there?
I don't see where they'd get. I don't know how that would work for them. Like I said, if they have a hybrid display, that's their only option.
Yeah.
In that market, I think.
You think just the weight of Amazon behind it is not enough to carry it?
No. What do I care about? I mean.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that their brand is strong enough for people to. You know, I don't know. I mean, well, I think their cloud. And their cloud music service, they have to improve that a lot before the tablet you're talking about makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah. There is something to be said for the Amazon brand, though. I mean, keep in mind that they can go ahead and put up a personal note from Jeff Bezos on the front page of Amazon anytime they want, and direct people to buy a product, and that is going to immediately generate hundreds of thousands of sales.
Sure.
Just because of their standing there. But as far as lasting impact and the ability to actually take a share from the market leader, I think you're right that's a bit more complex for them.
And, you know, it's one of those things, too, where, I mean, what does a Kindle cost? Like, isn't it like $150?
Yeah, In fact, with special offers, you can get it
I think a lot of the Amazon shoppers are... By nature of using Amazon, they are very cost motivated. I think a premium, they're not going to be able to put something out. I it's my belief that if they wanted to put out something better than an iPad, it's going to cost them more than an iPad, and I don't think that they're going to be able to sell it unless, you know, there's some if there's someone that's going to be able to have a monthly recurring revenue stream, it's Amazon. So maybe that's how that's possible. That's right. Possibly what they would look at. They would say, not only, that's what it's going to be. So, brains, you know, just had a brainstorm here. I think the only way that this makes a lot of sense to have some sort of either an enhanced display, like the dual e-ink and LCD, or something like an iPad, but with a subscription service behind it, or both, so that you are able to access the Amazon Prime Anywhere stuff. And stream all of their content on that device, essentially for, you know, $20 a month or something.
Right, and free 3G wireless, so you don't have to packaged in, so you don't have to worry about data costs.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's you know what, we are brilliant analysts.
And then you get free streamed movies, TV shows, music potentially.
Yeah. Well, why not? I mean.
Yeah.
If Spotify and Apple can negotiate that type of contract, then Amazon absolutely can.
Yeah, and then you potentially get, or you definitely get your Kindle books on there, and maybe you get a subscription there too. Read as many books as you want.
Yeah. You know what? That's a very good point.
Yeah. Huh. Well, it's got to be nice when you sell absolutely everything in the world. You can just sort of look into one of these product sectors and go, yeah, we can integrate all this with that.
Yeah, because they already have, like I said, they've already got the infrastructure in place. They have a supply chain for physical delivery stuff and warehouses all over the place. I mean, they're really doing something over there.
Yep, yep. So while Amazon may be rising in the tablet world, HP is falling and making a very hasty exit.
Couldn't suck any harder.
So this actually happened earlier today. The HP TouchPad tablet got a severe price cut. The $399 16-gigabyte model went down to $99. And then the 32-gigabyte model, previously available at $499, was $149 today. Which is,
if you can find them, right?
Like right. Yeah. Yeah. So they immediately became a bestseller. Best Buy, Amazon, almost any website that sold electronics was sold out of these things within a few hours. There was, I think, one website remaining with some of these in stock as of 3 or 4 p.m. today.
Well, grats. They all have their very own Newton.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's a cool piece of tech.
No, one week ago, Best Buy had, 250,000 of these things sitting in a warehouse, and they'd only sold 25,000.
Yeah.
Was the figure that I read somewhere on the internet. So, you know, 250,000 of them got moved over the weekend because they completely gutted them. You know, like Best Buy and other retailers had to be like getting ready to ship these things back. They had no choice.
Yeah.
And they've already dumped the platform. They've already, you know, it's not even on our roadmap anymore.
Yep. It was either this or they show up in a couple months on woot.com.
Like a Microsoft Kin.
Yeah.
I hear you can like get that. Those for $99.
It was kind of weird though, because all of a sudden this touchpad was at the top of the bestseller lists all over the place and was getting a ton of news coverage all over the place.
Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, sales rocking today.
Yeah, I mean, it's good exposure, I guess, but if HP is exiting the market anyway, it doesn't matter all that much. So
yeah, I mean, did they not get that memo? It's kind of a big deal. It was right up there with, Google picking up a chunk of Motorola.
Right. Yep. Yep.
That's a big story.
That is a big story. We don't have that on the agenda, but you wanna discuss that?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because I was talking to some people about this, and people are kind of curious. They're like, you know, it doesn't look like the markets, quote unquote, you know, like the Wall Street peeps didn't really seem to get it. Hmm. So I think they were kind of like skeptical that this was going on, and they didn't really know what to make of it. But I don't know. Like, if you're looking at the big picture, there's a bunch of people right now that all have a metric ass load of weaponized patent caches. And all they're doing is like plotting and scheming ways to block people from selling things. And, you know, they're just suing each other. And the only way they can protect themselves from these lawsuits is to be able to sue the other person for even bigger damages. So this entire patent acquisition spending spree going on right now is just another manifestation of that.
Yeah, yeah. So a little background on this. Google has historically been kind of averse to acquiring or filing for large amounts of software patents because they've generally been opposed to the idea, as are many software developers, actually.
They're kind of dumb, in my opinion. Like, there are some that I would be totally understand, but there's a lot of stuff that manages to get a patent on.
It's very easy to get a software patent for a concept that is extremely commonplace. I think there's a patent out there for a linked list is actually a patented patented thing.
Well, there's like some guy that, like some group of lawyers that bought up a bunch of patents so they could troll Rim into giving them money like a few years ago.
Right.
There's some big BlackBerry thing going on. It was this really dumb, obscure. Yeah.
So the trend in the industry then is to build up these large patent portfolios, and then if anyone tries to sue you, you can just countersue them with over one of your many thousands of patents in your portfolio. But since Google doesn't have this historically large patent portfolio, they've been at risk, as especially in the smartphone market, their competitors have gone after them. And so the idea is, and this is actually not all of Motorola. They're buying Motorola Mobility, which was spun off of Motorola. And the idea is that Motorola Mobility has a very large patent portfolio.
Yeah, they've been making radios for as long as there have been cell phones.
And
even before that.
Yeah, I don't know what the distribution is of patents between primary Motorola and Motorola Mobility, but I'd assume all the cell phone related patents are contained within Motorola Mobility when it was spun off.
That would probably be the case.
Yeah. Otherwise, Google's acquisition doesn't make any sense. So
my read on that also is that, remember when Apple and HTC and Samsung and someone else started going at it a few months ago, people were kind of wondering if when Motorola was going to wade in, and they were completely silent as far as I know. And that probably was an indication that someone was already talking to them to acquire them.
Yeah, yeah. Huh.
So that's probably been going on for, you know, at least 3 months.
Yep. And so then there's this other question about, well, then now they own a, they have the capability now to manufacture their own cell phones and vertically integrate there. Do they really want to do that? Or is this just a pure patent play? Which is still kind of up in the air.
I think it's something like, 18,000 employees come along with this.
Hmm.
So there's some concern on everyone's side, I would imagine, as to how a company as established and as conservative and traditional as Motorola is going to interact with and what synergies could possibly exist between them, the Six Sigma pocket protector class of 77 versus the 20-year-olds at Google.
Yeah, do you install Google style cafeterias in all the Motorola mobility buildings?
That's the least of their problems. Like, you know, they have very different management style, different values, and at least that's the perception, right? Like, it's entirely possible that Motorola is, you know, somehow secretly super hip and really cool, but they've always looked like, you know.
Well, they're certainly more corporate, or they have the reputation of being more of a traditional corporate structure and that sort of thing.
They're the establishment.
They are, yes. The anti-establishment has bought the establishment.
But
that's a lot of employees. So that's
But some of that's also like not just manufacturing, but supply chain stuff. You have sales organization. You have engineering, like RF engineering and software engineers. There's an awful lot of things there that come along with that acquisition, I think. And it wasn't it's not in Schaumburg, but there's another somewhere else in Illinois. I don't remember where it is, but I know they had an office in Schaumburg, at least used to years ago, but this is somewhere else, but it's not too far from here, so we'll see what happens. If anyone has to, like, you know, move, or if people will get rearranged or what. I don't think Google typically, they don't really have like a history of like acquiring a company just to punt them. And someone like Motorola is too Motorola Mobility is too valuable of a brand, I think, in the industry. It has street cred where Google lacks it.
Right.
I'll tell you that.
Right. And so Google has acquired plenty of companies, but typically it's sort of small startup like companies.
Yep.
And those integrate a lot better with the culture and aren't anywhere near as many employees. So this will definitely be interesting to watch.
Yeah, who knows?
Yep.
It'll be really, the HP thing is really just still kind of freaking me out.
Wait, what part of it?
Just, you know, their whole, it sounded like no one inside the company other than, you know, maybe a couple dozen people even knew it was happening. Like, I think most people that work at HP or work for HP got this announcement from the press release. Huh. Like, I get the impression that, like, you know, it's possible that the writing's been on the wall or whatever, but I don't know. I think it was a pretty big surprise.
Yeah. And they went into
like
this.
That governor from North Carolina or wherever who, like, showed up and said, I'm a level one in Brazil. I got to leave. Like, just took up and left.
Did this happen recently? I've not heard of this.
Like, 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, okay. All right. I don't think I remember that.
He disappeared on Father's Day weekend.
Oh, right.
We could find him, and he said he was like out hiking or something. And he's like,
he said for like a whole week. He was his secretary was saying, yeah, he's on a hiking trip, and then his family didn't know that, and then
I thought, you know, to be honest, I thought the story was really sweet. It's terrible for his life.
Wait. So I don't actually know what the end result was. I don't think I followed it through.
He fell in love with some woman that lives in Brazil. Like, he fell in love with someone, and he was just completely head over heels nuts for her. He was nuts enough to quit his job as the governor
and move out there.
I thought that was really kind of touching. I mean, it's terrible. it's a very traumatic thing, and you know, it's hard to to not empathize with people involved, and it's definitely unfortunate for them that it's such a public event. But
right,
it's kind of sweet that I don't know.
It's got that movie plot quality to it in some respects. Yeah,
absolutely. How sentimental am I?
All right. Well, speaking of sweet things, like this segue, PAX is this weekend. Penny Arcade Exposition. Do you know what this is?
I'm familiar.
All right. Do you know?
I've never attended, but I know some people who go to like PAX East all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. PAX East is in Boston. The original PAX Prime, is in, Seattle, where I am currently located.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm planning on going this
your
weekend.
Summer home.
Oh, what's that?
Your summer home.
My summer home in a suburb of the Seattle area where I'm currently summering and can't wait to get to PAX this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to grab I got a letter from I got a letter from PAX a couple days ago.
Did it say, "Dear Alan, we'd love to see you"?
No, it did not address me specifically. However, PAX Prime may not be the real PAX, but it is real, and it is a PAX. So that's got to count for something. More than something, maybe. It started here at the very minimum. It grew for 2 years in another city entirely until it molted, casting it off for a glorious new form. I guess what I'm trying to say is that this is the real PAX. There's PAX East in Boston. So.
Okay.
Reassuring us that this is in fact the real PAX. If you have no clue what we're talking about, let me fill you in a little bit here. There's this thing called the Penny Arcade Exposition. It's run by penny-arcade.com. It is a massive gaming convention and really has expanded beyond gaming in some respects, kind of like Comic-Con in San Diego is no longer actually about comics. Although it does keep a focus a little better than Comic-Con does, I think. And it is massive and a lot of fun and always sells out super quickly.
It's kind of like BlizzCon.
Like BlizzCon, yes. Although actually not quite as quickly as BlizzCon. BlizzCon sells out in like an hour.
Or less.
Or yeah, they started doing a raffle for BlizzCon, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, you had to like queue. Sit in a browser queue. Yeah, it was really terrible.
Huh. Have you been to BlizzCon?
Nope.
Huh. Okay. I've
often thought about going, but I just, you know, if I'm going to take one or two trips a year, one of them better be something that I can do with my old lady.
Right.
I don't know if
BlizzCon is the way to do that.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, she's got like all these conferences she has to attend, so she travels a lot during the year too. So
yeah.
most of ye travel budget is schlepping her all over the country to go to things that are much more important than BlizzCon, to be honest.
So I've been in the vicinity of BlizzCon while it was happening. Once met up with some people at a Denny's at midnight next to BlizzCon.
yeah. They don't even open until like 10 p.m., right?
Yeah. So that was fun times. But no, PAX, though, is bigger than BlizzCon because it's not just one company. It is all sorts of awesome gaming companies, gaming panels, game announcements, playing new games, that sort of stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll have a full report next week.
Looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if you're there, you can, you know, me, the eminently recognizable radio host, will be there. So if you can get past the throng of people following me around...
Yeah, can we make you like a, you know, a special badge maybe?
Yeah.
Are you going there like on a Hell Yeah?
Yeah, Alan Joyce, Hell Yeah Networks. Yeah, yeah, we need one of those.
I'll see what I can do.
Yep. Part of why I wanted to talk about this though is because it leads into something I've been wanting to plug for a while, which is this printing company, Moo.com. In preparation for PAX, I actually had Moo.com print me some stuff. So they do these little, they're famous for these little Moo mini cards, wow, which I'm sure
awesome.
You've seen, right?
I have some.
Oh, cool. Okay. They originally sort of launched them as a way for, one of their big suggestions at first was that photographers can use these things to promote their work because they actually do really high quality color printing on them. So you can put a nice image on the front and have your information on the back and that sort of thing. And they're very small. So they're not like business cards. They're easy to carry around in anything, and you give people them without them then having to have some sort of receptacle to put them into.
They're like a stick of gum.
Yeah, exactly. And they're a little different. You hand someone one of those and it provokes a little bit of a different response than a normal business card would.
That's true. And it's not because it's like awkwardly, stupidly shaped.
Right.
It's awkwardly shaped in that it's a little bit smaller than a usual card. Whereas like some people have like round business cards or something else really wrong with their business card. and it's terrible.
Yeah. So
I like the mini cards a lot. I think they're great.
Yeah. They in general, Moo makes really, really high quality printed products. So they do these mini cards. They now do, I think, postcards as well. And they do business cards, both rounded and non-rounded, whatever your preference may be. And so I use them for pretty much anything that can fit into one of the formats that they print on. Unfortunately, they don't do full page printing or any of the sort of stuff you'd get at FedEx Kinko's or at the corner print shop, or they don't do normal printing. They just do Moo printing. But they're really good at it. For packs, I have in front of me three sets of 50 business cards, but they're not business cards. They're a card game called the Metagame.
Oh God. Tell me more.
This is a game that basically it's like apples to apples. Apples to apples.
Go on.
You don't know apples to apples.
I know apples.
Okay.
To apples.
Okay.
I played the game. A caveat here. I don't usually like board games.
Okay. I mean the card games. You know. Not
I
games.
Know, but apples to apples. It's a group game, and I don't like people. So.
Yeah, that could be a limiting factor.
Yeah, I'm not great at things like that. I mean, I have fun doing it, but I'm terrible to play with. I'm not a good player.
And Apples to Apples is very much about the people you're playing with.
Yeah.
So Apples to Apples is this comparison game. It's you can look it up. It was all the rage.
Yeah, we get it. People are the worst, though. Come on.
Yeah. So
what's on your cards,
though? Year and a half ago. So there's this thing called the Metagame. You can find it at metagay.me. metagay.me. It's like apples to apples, but for video games. So you're comparing two video games and you've got some question about them. And they tried it out at GDC, which is kind of industry conference. And it went really well there, so they're manufacturing. You can actually buy their cards, but you can't buy them until mid-September. So I got my InDesign running and made a bootleg copy of the metagame.
You sure you want to admit to this? One of our
fine.
Dozens of listeners might report this.
I used all my original material, didn't violate any copyrights.
Okay.
Yeah. So it did all original material, all this, and made a made my own version of the metagame, and it says on the back of it bootleg metagame. So I'm not trying to infringe on these wonderful people who made this game. I'm just trying to get it before they're actually releasing their game, because they're not releasing it until mid-September, and PAX is this weekend. So I had to get cards printed for this game, and normally they're supposed to be playing cards. So I went for rounded business cards instead, and Moo did an incredible job.
Right after I'm trash talking around business cards.
Well, so if I was using
the reason I don't like them though is because you can't set it up on something to type in the information on it.
Oh.
So if you are expecting, because if I like to stand up a card.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's like a game card, that's a little bit different because you don't have to.
Yeah, so these are meant to be more like playing cards. Yeah, if I was ordering actual business cards, which I have through Moo.com, I order the standard square or rectangular business cards. But these are more designed to be playing cards, and they came out wonderfully, except for they cut them a little bit inaccurately, to the point where sort of the there's a gray border around the edges, and the border is thicker on one side than the other. It's actually not all that noticeable, and it kind of looks like it's meant to be that way. But they noticed this flaw before shipping them, because they do quality inspection and everything. And they noticed this flaw. They emailed me immediately, they shipped the flawed cards out so that I could have them now, and they are rush printing a correct set and sending me that as soon as possible.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which I was blown away by.
That's really nice.
Yeah. So and actually, for business cards, it would be kind of like I don't really need double the business cards, especially when some of them are flawed. But for these, it's like, great, I'll have a second set.
Wow, they really took good care of you.
So, yeah. So I wholeheartedly recommend Moo.com for all your printing needs. No, they are not a sponsor yet.
we need to get like a business development guy or gal, yeah, who will, you know, and we'll cut you in. We'll give you a percentage. All you gotta do is hassle people and try to get them to sponsor the show.
Yep. Yep. I think there's a referral system for Moo.com, but I just go to Moo.com and
you know what? We should totally do that. We should get like a referral for that and for like Amazon or something, and then we can
just post Amazon products in the notes.
Yeah, we can do Amazon products or any other vendor that has an affiliate program that we can use for our own nefarious purposes.
Yeah. Yeah. Bluehost.
what the hell is a Bluehost?
I actually still use Bluehost.
Sounds like something that there's a joke in there that I don't think is appropriate.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Before we talk about Star Trek,
did I tell you about Bar Camp?
No. Go on about. I saw the picture of you at Bar Camp because you posted it to our website.
That backpack shot.
It's a great backpack shot.
Love it. And you recently, before you did PAX.
Yeah.
But real quick, like, there was a Bar Camp in my area, and they weren't actually expecting it to be, like, a really big deal. But it was something like, there was, like, 200 people there, which is a pretty good turnout. And it was my local public library, which is a great venue. They had three tracks, and one of them was a technology track, and one was a creative track, and one was an entrepreneurial track. But one of the presentations I saw was for a high school robotics team. Hmm. And I thought that was awesome. That was probably one of the coolest things that I saw.
They were showing off their work?
Yeah, they had like a presentation on how they do their robots. And I mean, they were there, I think, you know, mainly to kind of solicit some people to help with the mentor side and assist them. But we got to have like a nice presentation about the program and things like that. It was pretty cool.
Cool.
But yeah, there was, when you were getting ready for PAX, you were shopping for something.
Yes. So thanks for reminding me, because I did want to talk about this. I sort of inspired by our messenger bag discussion. I think it was two shows ago. For PAX, my current bag is a little too big. It's meant to hold a 17-inch laptop. And I have a smaller bag, but that is actually not with me. The Waterfield SF Bags Musetto is back in the Bay Area, where I normally reside when I'm not summering in my summer home. So I needed something kind of in the middle. I needed something that hold my 15-inch laptop, but that would not be too much bigger than that. That would be a messenger bag. And I actually wanted to. I've always used messenger bags that hung down to around waist level.
It's like a shoulder bag. It's not really. I wouldn't call that a messenger bag.
Right. Yeah, because if you were like an actual bike messenger, you would not wear your bag like that.
No.
Yeah.
Or you'd die.
Right. So Chrome makes, they actually collaborate with bike messengers to make real bike messenger bags. I went ahead and bought a Chrome Mini Messenger, which is the smallest.
The Mini Metro.
It is a Mini Metro. Let me fix that in the notes here.
That's actually the same bag that I have, which, by the way, I used today because I was so inspired by your recent purchase that I pulled everything out of my Mission Workshop and into the Chrome Mini Metro.
Nice, nice. What's that?
What color did you get?
I got black and red, mostly black with a red highlight. Yeah.
That's pretty nice. Mine's like a dark forest green, like a hunter green, and then a like reddish orange, orange.
Yeah, so, I've got my Timbuktu bag is green with a black stripe down the middle and like a dark forest green. And then my Musetto is the brown leather with a olive green highlights inside.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully that, I think it'll be here tomorrow actually, and I'll get to give it some good field testing this weekend at PAX and see how it goes.
Right on.
Yep. All right. Before we talk about Star Trek, real quick, you have apparently a secret shame.
Yeah. So right now, if you go to the website, show.hellyeah.com, you can see, this weekend I spent some time, digging around, in my home office, trying to clean up my desk a little bit. For the life of me, though, I can never seem to quite get a handle on cords. And I'm wondering if you have any special suggestions or if anyone else has any ideas for this, because I have a fairly tidy desk, at least by my standards. Like, I generally have a pretty cluttery environment. I'm not really a well-organized person. I have a really hard time focusing on anything for an extended period of time. So I just, you know, things pile up, but I never am able to keep all the cords and crap in any way, shape, or form tied together correctly.
So is this cords that run across your desk or cords that run under your desk?
Well, they go behind my desk and then down to the floor because my computer's like on the floor.
Yeah.
And then, so I have this huge, my desk is actually an old door.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
I love it.
Yeah.
Solid. It's huge.
Yeah,
it's enormous. They were like, when I was working in Providence, we had a couple of these big giant wooden doors throughout the building that didn't have windows. And so people would routinely like bump into each other, trying to get through these doors or swing them into each other and things like that. So they were started replacing them with doors that had like glass windows set in. So
right. As
they were tearing these things off, I talked to the facilities guy and I said, hey, what's happening with all these doors? He's like, the ones that were tearing off the wall or throwing them in a dumpster. And I was like, how about, can I steal one? And he said, oh, absolutely. So I took home one of these giant doors and I have it up on Sawhorses.
Nice.
Yeah, it's very sturdy and it's great for like if you routinely open stuff up on your desk. It's a really big surface. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot. But seriously, the cable thing is complete disaster.
So I don't really have any, I don't think I have any good advice on the cable thing. Generally on top of my desk, everything stays very neat and clean. And I have a wireless mouse. So that cable there's basically no cables on the surface of my desk. There's an Ethernet cable running down off the desk. There's a power cable running down off the desk. And everything else is, and there's a cable running from my iPhone dock to its charger. But beyond that, there are no cables. There's a microphone cable right now. But in general, there's no cables on top of my desk. However, underneath or behind my desk, it's a not so much underneath, but behind it is a mess of various power and and USB cables mostly. Yeah.
I really wish. I hope that someone sells like a Thunderbolt port replicator device that I could like clamp to the underside of my desk and then just run one cable out.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
God.
Yeah. There's something to be said for going wireless in some areas to try and avoid that stuff, but there's still so many compromises with that.
I finally relented
and moved to a wireless mouse. That took a while.
My mouse is a Logitech G9X USB mouse.
Yeah.
And, that's all wired, and it's got a really nice like braided cord, fabric cord.
Yep.
And then, but most of the time I use a Magic Touchpad.
Right, and is that wireless?
Yeah, it's wireless.
Okay.
Touchpad.
Yeah.
I can't play games with it.
Right. Yeah.
So I have the mouse for that.
I went to a Razer Orochi wireless mouse. Which is technically a gaming mouse, but it's actually. It has two buttons on either side, but that's not compared to a lot of gamer mice out there.
No one makes a good trackball anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I'm a trackball guy.
Wow. Well, that explains the Magic Trackpad. At least it's something in between a mouse and a trackball, right?
Seriously. But the, one of my favorites was the Kensington Turbo Mouse, which was a Turbo Mouse, which was like a giant ADB It had a huge ball in the middle, like Centipede on the arcade game. Centipede, you ever play that?
Yes, yeah.
So you know what I'm talking about. It was a lot like that, and it was great, and you could like freely roll it, and fantastic. And they made a USB version, which was also good. I should probably see if they have another one. But Logitech, I bought a wireless trackball, and there's a really big design flaw where if you are using the scroll wheel, you can't right-click while you're scrolling because the button pushes into the wheel.
Oh.
It's really bad. Huh. And when I was playing WoW, I'm right-clicking a lot to hold the camera, right?
And then scrolling.
And then I'm scrolling a lot because I'm zooming and changing my view. And it was constantly like hanging and sticking for me. Drove me absolutely bananas. I took it to work. So I use it there. But I really wish that people pay more attention to trackballs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen or had to use a trackball, definitely.
Yeah, there's just I find them a lot more comfortable to use.
Huh.
I also like the little thingy that IBM, or not IBM anymore, but Lenovo puts like that nipple in the middle of the keyboard.
Oh, those are not easy to use.
I think they're great.
Huh. They're okay if they're an alternate solution, but if they are the only solution that your laptop has, if there's no trackpad and they just give you that, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not very comfortable. Yeah. I see your point.
Yeah. Anyway, those are our mice. In the show notes, you can find the names of our mice, and you can go and check out more about them. Again, an opportunity for us to throw in some Amazon affiliate links there.
Well, include a magic mouse, because I have one of those too, but I have a problem with it, so I never use it. It feels sticky. Like, I can't do any gestures on it. It's actually fine for, like, using as a mouse.
Uh-huh.
But anything like the swipe gestures, I find are very difficult to do on the magic mouse. I don't know why.
Wow.
And I actually Googled this once, and there were a couple other people, like, on some terrible forums thing that are just full of people crying and QQing over everything. But there was one that was like, my magic mouse is sticky, and I can't do any of the gestures. So when I try to swipe left, I end up moving the whole mouth. It's like, that's kind of my impression of the forum tool that hangs out at the Mac forums or wherever the hell it was. But yeah, it's I don't like the magic mouse.
All right. Well, should we even include that then in your list of mice?
Oh, yeah, you have to include it. It's there. I just don't use it very often.
All right.
I begrudgingly own it. I should probably Craigslist it.
Rounding out this show, besides some mice chat there, we've got another episode of Star Trek to discuss here. This is Season 2, Episode 3. It's Elementary, My Dear Data.
Oh, no!
That's the name of the episode. I'm not just saying.
This was not one of my favorite episodes.
So I love this episode.
Of course you did.
So you said you don't like the period fiction.
I hate them. I hate any period drama. Like anytime there's like a TV show about people in powdered wigs or something, I cannot get into it.
Even when the TV show is normally about something else and they're taking a diversion.
I have a hard time watching
sort of
stuff like Deadwood. I have a hard time paying, and I know that's supposed to be like a fantastic show. I really struggle to stay paying attention.
So you will love my first note that I wrote here then.
Yeah.
And that is it. On my iPhone notes that I was taking while watching, which is that Sherlock Holmes always plays.
Yeah. I mean, the episodes that take almost entirely take place in the holodeck, they're not all bad. I don't like things in ye olde England. What would I say? Mr. Data.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I loved it all. It was so good.
Not a fan.
My only issue, it's Elementary, Dear Watson, was not actually ever said by Sherlock Holmes.
Like, play it again, Sam.
I really like this episode because it's the kind of episode that gives the fact that it all takes place on the holodeck gives the writers this chance to just sort of like play out their wildest fantasies for Star Trek. They kind of take it in a different direction and experiment a bit, and you get some interesting discussions and stories that come out of it, I think. But obviously you beg to differ on that.
Yeah, I don't like, oh, look at us, we're in another time, how everything is strange. I don't get into it.
Okay, you had to love when they're all dressed up, when they have to call in Picard and Worf and everyone, and they're all standing outside the holodeck ready to go in, and Worf is dressed in this perfect English suit.
Yeah.
Someone, I think it was Picard, turns to him and goes, "You'll be a big hit in London."
See, I don't know.
You don't
not
like that?
Not the finest show. No. Oh. I thought it was dumb. In fact, it really kind of soured me on watching Star Trek.
Oh no. More than season 2 episode 1?
Yeah, it's I think what we need to do for the good of the show, if nothing else, I think we should focus on the best episodes.
Really?
Well, I think we should min-max our Star Trek.
I probably would have ranked this as you know, one of the better episodes.
Well, then we're off to a great start. But I think we could probably watch maybe pick and choose a little bit, and maybe also do the same thing with other shows.
My last note on this, and there's a few notes in between that I still want to get to, but my last note that I took while watching this show was, and I quote, "Gotta love this show."
All right. Now, are you being somewhat tongue in cheek about this?
No,
totally
I really enjoyed this episode. When they,
you're not just busting my balls.
No. When they act out when Data is going through the Holmesian reasoning. Oh, I love that. I like Sherlock Holmes. I think, you know, I like the fiction, and I think it's a good aesthetic. I like that whole.
Why couldn't they do like a Call of Cthulhu episode?
It brings that element of classic literature into it, which I love when that happens, because you've got Jean-Luc Picard, you know, Patrick Stewart, who's got this very theatrical feel to him, and he's British, of course, so
he's
the Sherlock Holmes
actor,
thing plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it all works really well.
I don't know. I kind of liked the hologram becoming self-aware thing.
Yeah. So this is what my other notes were about here. Is I thought this episode had quite a bit to do with information security, if only in a sort of lessons learned type of way. the holodeck.
How's your utopia now?
Yeah.
That's really what it is. That's really what it comes down to, is that they're all living in the future where there's like no money and you can hit a button and get food. So it never even occurs to them that maybe there are some design flaws.
Right, right. So the holodeck has these really terrible security protocols where, first of all, when they first... So this challenge happens where Geordi tells the computer to create an enemy that even Data cannot... Or that will be a challenge to even Data.
Yeah. Who's an android?
Who's an android himself?
For computer brain. Yeah.
And so when this command happens, there's a power surge, and the holodeck CPU diverts power or consumes enough power that the bridge notices it and logs it as sort of an anomaly or something.
Yeah.
So you first of all got this really terrible notion of power regulation, that is the least of their problems, really, because then this program that the holodeck cooks up is able to override the holodeck security protocols and take it into its own hands and actually direct everything that's going on, to the point where even Picard cannot override what this program is doing.
Yeah. It's like asking God to make a rock so big that God can't lift it.
And it happens, and it is, and it's
paradoxically,
yeah. The computer creates a program that it then cannot override. Which I don't know. You want to weigh in on this from an information security perspective?
terrible design. It's a lot like it's a lot like Adobe Flash. So when you first get Adobe Flash, you say, oh, this is great. Now I can play my desktop tower defense game or watch a video.
Yeah.
Go to YouTube or watch an advertisement.
I think YouTube works without Flash now, doesn't it?
Well, some videos do. But the problem is, Alan,
yeah,
you have to go to youtube.com/HTML5 to join the HTML5 beta program.
Oh, I thought it would do it automatically if you don't have Flash installed. Huh.
No.
Oh, wow.
All the time I get the, I'm sorry, you need to install a better version of Flash than the one that I have right now, which is Flash 0.0. Like, I don't have the plugin installed.
So you don't, what do you think about Flash blocking plugins? I use Flash Block for Chrome. Is that secure enough?
Why would you block Flash when you can just not have it
not install it? Yeah.
Be subject to it. It's a terrible, terrible piece of software. It's total crap. It's awful.
Much like the holodeck, right?
Yes. So I think you know that entire nonsense about how they have a security protocol for all this, I don't really know how to – I don't know that there is a real-world lesson here other than, do your due diligence.
Right.
Which is really what everything comes down to in a lot of cases, is just don't do dumb things like install Flash or ask the computer to create an opponent for the holodeck that can outsmart another supercomputer. I don't know. I don't like the whole Sherlock Holmes thing is where they lost me. I think I would have liked the episode a lot more if they didn't have that.
If it was the same plot but in a modern context?
Yes. I would absolutely have liked the episode.
Huh. That's interesting.
I hate episodes where they try to take you back in time.
So it what about the original Sherlock Holmes style material? Are you opposed to that too, or is it just when they're trying to sort of fake it?
What do you mean? Like,
say there was a play or a movie that was actually drawing directly from a Sherlock Holmes book.
I saw that.
The recent Sherlock Holmes movie?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, with what's his name in it?
Yeah, that was questionable. That with Iron Man.
Is it Iron Man? I thought it was the Terminator.
No, it's Iron Man.
Silver Surfer, maybe? Who's the guy with the hat?
Oh, you mean the sidekick?
You're terrible at this game. But there's... I thought that was okay. Like, it wasn't great. Actually, it was a pretty bad movie.
I thought it was terrible because it's...
I wasn't put off by the costumes and all of that. I think maybe that's what it is. I don't know if it's just... I don't like costumes.
Huh. I don't know. Well, that was a very modern movie. That was much like the modern adaptation of Star Trek, which the one that recently came out ended up being much more about action and these fast action sequences than it was about taking a lot of time to sit down and reason about what was going on.
Yeah, you didn't find that the new J.J. Abrams Star Trek.
So I liked it, but
it's a good movie.
Yeah.
But you're right that it is a very it is much less interpersonal.
Yeah, yeah. The episodes
it's less cerebral.
The episodes that I really like of Star Trek, this season 2 episode 3 being among them, are the ones where it is all about figuring out what's going on and finding a logical solution to it. Which is
you're right about that. I mean, that, like I said though, it's just it loses me with the whole Sherlock Holmes thing. I don't know what it is. I can't get into it.
I can play
a stupid game where I'm like, a goblin that casts spells, but I have a hard time suspending my disbelief when it comes to period dramas. I don't know.
And from what I understand, there's a few Sherlock Holmes episodes in Next Generation, right?
Oh, hello,
Cat. What just happened over there?
Sorry, I left you hanging there. I had to go. Jonesy was clawing at the door.
Ah, yeah, we knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, that was Star Trek Season 2, Episode 3, Elementary, my dear Data.
Do you like the original series?
Yeah. What I've seen of it, it's, yeah, it's a little cheesy.
Oh, a little. So, do you want a recommendation for one of those?
All right.
Well, do you?
Yeah, if it involves Sherlock Holmes especially, but
let me see if I can think of one that I would recommend that you watch in particular. I'm not going to have it right now.
Okay. All right.
It might be A Muck Time, which is good, but it might be also Plato's Stepchildren, which is not so good, but for a different reason. there's a lot of nuance to the original series, I think.
I'm sure.
I'm trying to remember or think of episodes in particular that are frequently parodied in other shows that you would probably, watching it on watching it in its original form on Star Trek, be like, oh, I think that's what I'm going for.
Huh. Okay. Like every episode of Boston Legal?
or the first three seasons of the X-Files.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for Hell Yeah Show episode 4.
Four.
We've made it to 4. And we have no plans to stop now.
Looks like we made it.
Nice.
Have a good solo.
I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And we will see you next week.
Bye, Gaddafi.